before we go into this week's rebroadcast, I'd like to apologize for my recent unannounced two-week hiatus. I still love doing this show and hearing from listeners. It's a top priority. But my many projects and demanding job all got ahead of me during the recent heat wave. I've since shaken off my paralysis, but have decided to continue the hiatus until September 5th, when I'll be uploading all new shows again. In the meantime, I'm going to have to break my New Year's resolution and post suggested repeats for my downloaders and broadcasters. But if all goes according to plan, I'll have a new apartment building, including backyard, to tell you about when I'm back. A few shows in the can, as they stay, so I won't be scrambling every week and can stick to a consistent upload schedule. And we'll have spent some time working on how to get the level straight when I do my in-the-field shows, to make things a little easier on my radio programmers and listeners. I'm going to try to have a good time somewhere in there, too, and I hope you all get a chance to do the same. Warm regards, Bucky. As an urban chicken evangelist, I focus on the positives of small flock chickening, especially in underutilized settings, such as urban and suburban backyards. My regular listeners have heard hundreds of times about toxin-free bug and weed control, poop that accelerates compost production and enriches garden soil for better vegetable growing, amazing-tasting eggs, and how chickens and chickening is entertaining, fun, and good for your mental health. I also risk sounding like a scold, and I criticize factory farming for squandering fossil fuel, for animal cruelty, labor violations, for providing low nutrition and anemic tasting products, and for endangering public health with pollution and avian flu. As these criticisms become more well known, industry is getting better at defending itself and has even improved their practices here and there. But ultimately, backyard chickening is the most fun and rewarding response. In politics, it's considered risky messaging to address negative charges when you know you have a positive message to pitch. My agenda is not personal. It's about good times for all, so I consider it a moral imperative to face those issues. And today's episode is about just one of the toughest, the presence of lead in urban chicken eggs. In October 2009, Oregon's Portland Tribune printed an opinion piece by a former chickener about the lead problem. I've cited Portland, Oregon as the urban chickening capital of North America. Residents of that city took to chickening early and big, so it's not surprising that a Portland chickener would be among the first to raise an alarm. The leading source of lead in urban soil is from paint from before the 1978 ban. Lead dust from housing repainted since then has already flaked off and contaminated the soil. Lead is persistent stuff, and a couple of teaspoons of lead dust can contaminate an area the size of a football field for many years. Paint is just one of the many sources common in urban areas, including emissions from unleaded gasoline, improperly disposed batteries, burnt trash, and household items. Non-organic urban gardening and agriculture can be a source as well, as in the case of lead-painted wood, chipped for mulch, insecticides, and many commercial fertilizers. Most urban soil has some lead. Meanwhile, chickens love to eat near walls, where bugs like to hang out and weeds can find purchase, and also where lead concentrations from paint dust is high. They also are attracted to paint itself. Paint chips look like ground eggshells, which many of us feed to our chickens to replenish their calcium, and lead tastes sweet, or so they say. But really, it's the invisible lead dust that causes the major problems. I think it's interesting to note that barn and farm paint has always been non-lead-based, even called milk paint, because farmers have known for generations that lead paint sickens livestock. Why we collectively decided that it was an okay trade-off to add lead to paint as pigment to speed drying and to increase durability is an excellent rhetorical question, as is why agriculturalists started using insecticides and fertilizers containing lead. As you may have guessed, chickens who consume lead lay eggs which contain lead. Some, not all, urban chickeners have tested their flock's eggs and discovered alarmingly high lead concentrations. Lead poisoning causes increasing and eventually irreversible neural damage in chickens and humans, and especially for the young of both species. So it's not nice to expose your chickens to lead, and eating eggs that contain it is dangerous to us. This is a conflict for us. Do we give up chickening? How bad is the lead problem? What can we do? First of all, every chickener should get their soil and their chickens' eggs tested. There's plenty of information about lead testing online or from your local agricultural cooperative extension office. It's not terribly expensive to get testing, and it's clearly worth it. I have to warn listeners, they'll have to give some thought to their own comfort levels, but it is generally believed that it can be safe to consume vegetables grown in lead soil up to a point. The safety statistics and thresholds are too much for me to address here, but the EPA, and again the local agricultural cooperative extension office, can provide the essentials in under an hour. Regardless of test results, we can all take steps to avoid lead exposure. Find ways to discourage chickens from pecking near the wall if you know it's a risk. Keep their pen as far away from structures whose paint you know to be lead-based or can't account for. Although remediation is not easy, there are things you can do to improve your lead situation. The problem with lead removal is that activities that disturb or damage lead-based paint create lead dust. It's extremely important to avoid sanding or scraping leaded paint. Many people hire professionals for lead paint removal. Some locales even have laws against doing it yourself. However, addressing the paint situation is not going to remediate your soil. It'll just stop it from getting worse. There are three basic ways to lower lead levels. 1. Immobilize the lead by raising soil pH and adding compost. Many experienced gardeners know all about playing with pH levels. If you're not one of them already, learn. Lead is relatively unavailable to plants when the soil pH is above 6.5 or when phosphorus levels are high. 2. Covering the high lead soil with clean soil. And 3. Removing the top layer of soil. Some remove up to 6 inches of soil. Lead is most readily absorbed through direct exposure to soil through handling, or even worse, eating contaminated soil or dust. The sort of good news is that most plants do not absorb or accumulate lead. Even those that do, such as sunflower and mustard greens, are so inefficient at it that experiments to use them as natural remediators have proved inadequate. So crops like corn, beans, squash, tomatoes, strawberries, or apples are all quite safe, and most leafy greens are reasonably safe. But here's the caveat. Make sure you wash everything you eat in 1 to 100 vinegar water solution or 1 to 200 unscented soap to water solution. This means that you can also safely feed your chickens from your own garden. In fact, chickens housed in a generous but penned area and who eat container garden veggies are practically risk-free. The real challenge comes from folks like me who have a strong preference for as much free-ranging as possible. I also recently learned that consuming cilantro may help the body expel lead. Only a handful of studies have been done and it's not clear to me what the mechanism is, so I don't want to swear by the science. But the anecdotal evidence sounds promising. Humans would have to eat a large, but not ridiculous, amount of cilantro to benefit. I believe I've eaten that much during certain phases of my life. Chickens, as I've mentioned on the show, love cilantro and can and do eat large amounts relative to their body weight. Bacaw chickens have always consumed cilantro as a staple, and I wonder if I have inadvertently kept their and my lead levels low. If some of my listeners were following my feed advice, they would have the same benefit. It's important that we don't just give up. Of course, I don't recommend going back to corporate vegetable or eggs. That's almost obvious. My understanding is that lead is not a huge problem in industrial agriculture, but other negatives are. In some ways, it's about the trade-offs. If you have a lead problem with your chickens, it's one you already are dealing with in your immediate environment. Proceed chickening with care, but ceasing your chickening activities alone is not going to solve your lead problem. Even limiting oneself to only free-range organic eggs grown near but not in the city is a premature surrender. I'm not going to say, without chickens, what do you have to live for anyways? But I will say that denying yourself the fun of chickens is a step backwards for those of us who've already signed on to the agenda. As with many problems in contemporary agriculture, backyard chickening can be a solution to the systemic problem of lead in our environment. Chickens don't help reduce the use of lead paint, but backyard chickening does reduce the use of lead-containing fertilizers and insecticides, and fossil fuel emissions from food transport. Caring for chickens also helps us get in the awareness and remediation mindset. Indeed, I started thinking more seriously about lead, and finally did this episode, after I started raising chickens, mostly in my apartment, and I noticed them pecking at my baseboards and thought, I wonder if that's lead paint. Something I should have considered for my own health even before the chickens were around. And it was important for me to realize that becoming aware of the lead problem didn't have to be a discouraging downer, but could be viewed as an opportunity to have fun creating solutions. This has been Bucky Bacaw. I had a good time.
Call.